Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Just three cardinal rules of my ability and longevity. One, surround yourself with people whose eyes light up when they see you coming. Two, slowly is the fastest way to get to where you want to be. And three, the top of one mountain is the bottom of the next, so keep climbing.
But to gaze at a stage of performers like these, or any and all of tonight's nominees, to be in their presence and bask in their art, will lighten your spirit and gladden your heart. The laughs fill your belly, the tears fill your eyes. The hair on the back of your neck starts to rise. And it's so indescribably pleasant. You're in the moment and totally present. You go to a show cause the show lets you know that you're here. And you're now, and you're real, and you feel alive. You feel alive.
So it's gonna be a long night, right?
I'm so hungry.
This is a collect call from The Theater Podcast, bringing you exclusive behind-the-scenes access to The Theater Awards Season 2019.
This is Serial, part of a Broadway lover's complete breakfast. In this special five-part mini-series, we bring you stories and interviews from some of the most hard-to-access places throughout the month of May, leading up to the red carpet and press room of the Tony Awards themselves, which took place on June 9th, 2019. This is now part 5 of Serial. If you haven't listened to parts 1 through 4, I encourage you to pause and back up a few weeks so you can listen to the road leading up to tonight. The Antoinette Perry Award for Excellence in Broadway Theater, more commonly known simply as the Tony Awards, were first given out 73 years ago on April 6, 1947, and are presented by the American Theater Wing and the Broadway League. Inside Radio City Music Hall, as the award ceremony was taking place, there was a small room across the street that they called the Media Room. This is where all the press outlets lucky enough to be granted access to speak to the Tony Award winners patiently await the results of the night. There were people live-tweeting results, updating websites in real time, taking notes for their publications going out early in the morning, and Jillian and myself. Once the winners gave their acceptance speeches, they were taken across the street to see us. No longer on national TV, adrenaline somewhat gone away, no time pressure of a ticking clock to make a speech, the winners were able to relax a little bit and directly answer our questions. There was a small crew controlling two cameras and a pool of microphones all pointed at a small stage in the front of the room. For the techies out there, they had the Media Room video and audio feeds available for local recording via BNC and XLR cables respectively. We plugged an XLR cable into our recording gear, set up our personal microphones on the table in front of us, and quietly began recording, trying our best not to disturb anyone around us who was listening to the live telecast of the Tony Awards themselves.
Guys, we're here.
Oh my goodness, it's 7:55 Eastern Standard Time. We shot that whole thing without a script.
Yeah, but it was great. We're in the press room right now.
We're in the media room, the press room. I don't know exactly.
I don't know. My feet hurt.
What it is. Yeah. Oh, we were standing for so many hours.
Oh, I hear James Corden's voice.
We met James Corden and met his parents. And one of the best moments of the night was when he introduced Jeff Daniels to his parents.
His dad's a crier. It's so cute. He's just so proud of his son.
They are both so proud.
And Alan, do you want to describe what this room is, what we're seeing right now?
This room. Okay, so the press room. Imagine if you've ever been to a press junket, which I'm sure doesn't help a lot of people. So we're basically all at tables that are rectangular tables. There's one, two, three, four.
It's almost like classroom
six,
style.
Yes, classroom style. Six rows of tables. There's two aisles, so three sections, and it's probably 50 feet wide. We're in a room, a big room directly across 51st Street from Radio City. So when the winners win, they will come across the street, come up onto the stage here. There's a nice step and repeat that has Tony, CBS all over the place. And then it's basically, if you imagine, okay, the White House briefings, where somebody stands in front and everybody raises their hands and asks their questions. And so everyone's asking questions publicly and hearing each other's answers. The energy in here is much, much less stressful. The red carpet, man, that was stressful.
It was like the best kind of stressful, though.
It was an exciting stressful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I won't sleep tonight. But like, because this is literally dreams come true right now. I really like in here. It's nice and cool. There's some sitting. They gave us these cool snack boxes. We have the Tony Playbill. I'm so excited. I've been collecting Playbills since I was 12.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, this is
like the pinnacle of my collection right now.
The pinnacle of your collection. This is kind of incredible. Yeah. Not everything asked or spoken made it into the final cut of this episode, but we'll try to give you a glimpse into what made us laugh, get inspired, and maybe even shed a few tears. The very first person to come speak with us was someone we've spoken to already when she won her Drama Desk Award, Celia Keenan Bulger, who now stood in front of us holding her Tony Award for Best Supporting Actress in a Play. When asked why now is the right time to play her character of Scout in Aaron Sorkin's Broadway adaptation of To Kill a Mockingbird, she had the following to say.
Yeah, I mean, I think so much of why it feels like right now it's important has to do with what Aaron Sorkin did with the script and the way that I feel so attached to what he is trying to put out onto a Broadway stage that is asking these really big questions about our country's relationship to race and where we've come from and what more morality and justice mean. I think this is also the first time I've been nominated when I had a 4-year-old child. And so everything is sort of being filtered through the lens of also being a parent and what his experience of watching To Kill a Mockingbird or reading To Kill a Mockingbird will be. So I just think it's almost less, it's about the character certainly, because I have been obsessed with Jean-Louise Finch for as long as I can remember, but it's also very much about this play in this moment, in this cultural moment that we're living in right now.
Rob Howell, who took home not one but two Tony Awards for costume design and scenic design for his work in The Ferryman, the most decorated play of the evening, gave the following answer when asked what it means to him to win two awards.
We're very, very lucky people. That's a given. We put on plays for a living. Right? That's a lot to be able to say that we do. And I'm proud of the journey that I was allowed to be part of with The Ferryman. And I can't remember what I said in my speech. What I was trying to say was that we all started with an unfinished but already beautiful thing. And to be part of a band of people who are committed to something which still isn't finished, but we're all committed to, that is a sort of tremendous privilege.
The most decorated musical of the evening was, of course, Hadestown. First to speak on behalf of the show was Bradley King, who won the award for Best Lighting Design of a Musical. And he tells us about why he was able to collaborate so well with the rest of the Hadestown creative team.
It helps when you've spent 3 years together sort of marinating in the same pot, when you've spent a winter in Edmonton, Canada, like many of us have. That brings people really close together. And then when you travel out of town to London for a month, that brings you even closer. And it's just the opportunity to really, really develop a design over many years, I think, leads to some really great collaboration and some really design elements interacting really well with each other.
Bradley King presents as a white male. When asked about his opinion on how to get more women, especially women of color, involved in lighting design,
he has the following to say.
You know, I think a lot of people think that there's a pipeline problem and that, oh, well, we don't have younger designers of color or we don't have younger women designers. That's absolutely false. I work with them all the time. They're my friends, they're my colleagues, but they aren't given the opportunities for the bigger and bigger shows. They're not in the room to make the connections that this is an entirely connection-based business that designers are in. It's about knowing producers, it's about knowing directors, and if you're not allowed into the room, then you can't develop those connections and build a career. So I think it's incumbent on not just on producers and directors and artistic directors, many of whom are often picking the design teams for their directors at nonprofit theaters, to cast their nets wider, but also for those of us doing bigger shows to make sure that our assistants and our associates are really from diverse backgrounds, economically, ethnically, we need to cast a much wider net.
Bertie Carvel, after winning Best Featured Actor in a Play for his work in Ink, discusses how he chooses what roles he wants to accept in his future.
Exciting ones and things that I haven't done before. I've made a rule not to repeat myself, so I hope I can do that. The problem with that is that nobody recognizes you and then you don't get cast in things because they're like, wasn't that that guy who did that completely different thing? So I'll hope to carry on that pattern.
Bertie also speaks to some feedback he got from Rupert Murdoch himself and what he thinks the responsibility of journalism actually is.
I think art and journalism in common have a duty to the truth, but I think their way to it is different. And we are doing a play, and my first primary job is to serve the play. The play is not a play about Rupert Murdoch, it's a play about populism, it's a play about journalism and the state of it now and how we got there. And I think in thinking about those things, I've got more license than a journalist would have. In answer to your question, what feedback did we get? I asked him what one thing he'd change, and he said nothing. Having said that, it was too late by then, so he probably took the right tack.
Next to win for Hadestown was the scenic designer Rachel Houck, who in her own way echoed what was said previously by Bradley King about the entire show being created as a single entity, born all at once from a collaborative team.
It's extraordinary. I mean, it is hands down the hardest thing I have ever done. Those lyrics and that music is pure poetry. It could look like anything. And for us to have journeyed so long together, those designs are fused together. There's no sort of separation in ideas. And I think the reason that the piece is so powerful from the design standpoint, amongst many other things, that it carries great power, the music was born together, the orchestrations were born together, the lights and the sound are completely interwoven with the set. So, you know, for all of us to have taken this very long, very extended journey to the birth of this piece together, and it's grown and grown and grown, and we've learned a lot about what it is and a lot about what it isn't, and all of that journey is in the designs that's on stage. So to receive this recognition as a team is extraordinary and very, very rewarding.
Bob Mackie won Best Costume Design for a Musical for his work on the Cher Show. Since most of the costumes are replicas of what Cher originally wore at certain points in her career, it's my opinion that this is a validation of how amazing all the costumes are that he has created for Cher over the years. Not just what he created for this particular show. With that said, when asked if he wanted to do more Broadway, of course he said yes.
I would love to design for another musical, but hopefully not one with bare tummies and too much glitter. I think I've done enough of that in my life.
When asked about his creative process, Fitz Patton, who won Best Sound Design of a Play for Choir Boy, gives the room some interesting insight into what kind of feeling he strives for when putting himself into his work.
It's hard to differentiate between sound and what sound is, what the transition music is, what the, you know, the quality of the voices of the actors. But if you want to think about it now, you have to ask yourself, was I immersed in it? Was it transporting? Did the theater vibrate and with an energy I've never heard before? Like this theater, let's say that the theater you're in, you're always like, oh, it's a decent theater. But tonight, the show you were at, was it like really exciting? Did you forget you were in a theater? That's a good thing, you know? And so I think it's like, you know, if you had to ask yourself a question, you know, what it was, it's really about, you know, did the sound make you forget where you were? And did it bring you so close to the actors and so close and take you so far inside the world that you were just, you know, the word is transported, but I think more to it, you become thoroughly lost in the adventure of it.
One of the awards Tootsie took home was Best Book of a Musical, written by Robert Horn. Normally, this category is won by a drama. Tootsie, being a comedy, stands out in this regard.
Listen, I think it was a really vibrant season for dramas and comedies and musicals in general. I love that comedy, you know, that this is sort of a modern, old-fashioned musical, and it's been a while since we had one, and I loved having the opportunity to sort of say that that genre still very much exists and is important for Broadway.
There are so many things in life that stress me out. You know what shouldn't stress me out? Eating! So we can all eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So you can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options for all dietary needs. And you can discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and even some drinks to help you stay fueled up. Factor is also celebrating Earth Day all month long, so look out for the Earth Month's Eats badge on the menu for our lowest carbon footprint meals. Say that 5 times fast. Earth Month Eats. Earth Month Eats. Just remember, these no-fuss, no-mess meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, and cleaning up, so just simply heat and eat the good stuff. Head to factormeals.com/TTP50 and use code TTP50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code TTP50 at factormeals.com/TTP50 to get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. So what are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up your springtime goals.
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Rachel Chavkin took home the Tony for Best Direction of a Musical for Hadestown. She was asked a question about how she broke into the industry and gave an answer that I hope gives perspective on how hard most people have to work before they are recognized, if they ever are.
I would never say I broke into anything. I began working right out of college as an assistant director and also producing my own work. And I never stopped doing that. And that was in bars during the daytime where a friend was working and we could get the space in the basement. That was in whatever free space that we could get. And I started a company called The Team that is still around today, an experimental ensemble. And then slowly began also working with writers and composers, including Dave Malloy. And I would say Dave and I kind of probably came through together when Great Comet became a hit in 2012.
Rachel's televised acceptance speech was powerful, and on the topic of diversity and inclusion, said that everyone is ready to go. In the media room for us, she explained a little further.
As maybe you know, inclusion has long been a particular passion of mine. I think that our field is filled with progressive people, and yet our field is not exemplary in terms of living its politics. First and foremost, who is telling the stories and what stories are we telling? So I think inclusion is like at the forefront, and before we worry about fixing problems elsewhere, I think there has to be a lot of attention paid to our own backyard. And Broadway is the most visible part of the backyard. Other parts of it are like thriving, and I think we're seeing this incredible renaissance of voices, writers and directors and designers and choreographers working downtown and off Broadway and regionally around the country. So that's what I meant when I said everyone is ready to go. It's not a call for altruism, it's just a call for hiring the people and not assuming that directing on Broadway or Xing on Broadway is a prerequisite for Xing on Broadway, because that's just a recipe for disaster.
Continuing with one last sound clip from Rachel, Here's what she had to say when I asked her how it happened that she started working with Anais Mitchell.
Anais told me that she contacted you after she saw your work on Great Comet.
Comet, yeah.
Do you remember where you got that call and how you felt when you got this call and Anais was on the other line
well,
saying, I want you to do...
Well, it was 2012, so it was an email. and it was a friend, actually. It was a mutual drummer who is like a really sick drummer. And he wrote to connect the two of us. We spent about 6 months dating, actually, as colleagues, trying to figure out what collaboration would be like. And then finally in 2013, by that time, I had fallen very deeply in love with the 2010 studio album and with Anais as a human being. And when we leapt in finally in like 1 4.5 hour Skype session. But years later, actually, I was looking through on my iPhone, I keep just a running list of like dream projects and collaborators and things that I hear about. And I was, for some reason, going through it. And at the very bottom of the list was the note, Anais Mitchell, songwriter, heard on Soundcheck, that I must have taken in like 2010, 2 years before we ever connected. So in retrospect, it feels like kismet, but that's the story.
Sergio Trujillo won the Tony for Best Choreography for Ain't Too Proud. When asked if he felt he was at a disadvantage because they didn't have an official out-of-town tryout, he had the following to say.
Yeah, I mean, I think going into this show, I had a head start because I knew Ephraim Sykes was in Memphis. He was one of he was actually 20 years old when I hired him, and he was one of my lead dancers in the show. Derek Baskins was also in Memphis. Jim Harkness danced actually in 3 of my shows, and Jeremy Pope danced in Invisible Thread, which is an off-Broadway show. And so going into this, I had a head start. So, you know, what's been great about the journey of Ain't Too Proud is that we did Berkeley, Washington, LA, Toronto, and so we developed a sort of a shorthand in the process. So when you open a show cold in New York City, it really creates a lot of pressure, a lot of stress, and it may not at times be the most sort of constructive way of working, but in this way we were able to breathe life into it, and I was able to, you know, continue to just even the day before opening night, I was fine tuning all the choreography because I felt like this was an opportunity for me to step up to bat and hit a home run.
Making history tonight was the first person in a wheelchair to win a Tony Award. The Tony for Best Featured Actress in a Musical went to...
Ali Stroker!
Oh, yeah.
She had some amazing advice for producers and theater owners on how to be more accessible, not only for front-of-house patrons, but backstage actors.
Well, The theaters for the house where all the audience comes in, that is all made accessible to patrons, but the backstages are not. And so I would ask theater owners and producers to really look into how they can begin to make the backstage accessible so that performers with disabilities can get around.
She gave a wonderful explanation of her process of working with her director and choreographer from Oklahoma to explore what she can and cannot do, and have real conversations about what's feasible on stage.
Yeah, I got to collaborate with our choreographer and our director very closely because the reality is that I know my vocabulary as far as movement goes the best, and so we talked a lot about like what could work throughout the show, especially because this character and this role has relationships with two different guys, and so how are we going to physicalize all of that? And I think the first part of that process is trust, you know, is to have these conversations with them about that the way that I move and the way in which we can portray this woman's sexuality and physicality is all going to be done in a safe way. Because for them, they have never worked with someone in a chair. So it's been really, really fun to find that with them.
Winning the Tony for Best Revival, producers Ryan Murphy and David Stone accepted the award for The Boys in the Band. Speaking first is Ryan. They were asked about being attached to the Netflix production of this, to which they said,
David and I are producing it.
Joe Mantello is directing it. It is one of the first things that I set up right when I did my Netflix deal. And, you know, this is the 50th year of this play. And what I'm excited about is, you know, 165 million people all over the world internationally will now have access to watch this play. And I remember being a very, very young guy, 6, 7, and seeing Boys on the Band on television. And it was the only thing that I had. It was the only group of gay men I had ever seen. So I'm just excited about the evolution of that idea and bringing it to a new audience. And Joe, who's such a brilliant theater director, getting the chance to work in a different medium with great support.
You know, Mart has mentioned that this is probably the only property in history that was filmed with its original off-Broadway cast and made a film in 1970, and then filmed with its original Broadway cast, both 50 years later, 50 years from the play, and then 50 years from the film.
One of the most satisfying moments of the night was right after Rosemary Harris was given her Lifetime Achievement Award for her amazing 67-year Broadway career. She made her Broadway debut in 1952, and before this, the only Tony she received was in 1966 for The Lion in Winter. She was just seen in My Fair Lady and speaks to why she decided to accept the role.
Yes, I my base camp, I live in North Carolina. And I was there when Andre Bishop emailed me and said, would I like to come and replace Dame Diana Rigg, who was leaving? And I thought about it. My husband had just passed away, and so I was in a fog. I wasn't really quite sure what I wanted to do. But my daughter, Jennifer, said, well, perhaps you should go up and see the show first before you make a decision. So, of course, I came up and fell in love with it. It's the most beautifully realized production. But I decided that it was far too difficult. It would be like trying to get onto a moving train, a express train, while it was moving, and I didn't think I would be capable of it. But I thought a little bit more about it. I wrote an email to Andre Bishop, but I didn't send it. I kept tweaking it and tweaking it and tweaking it, and finally I decided maybe I should bite the bullet and be brave and do it. And I'm very, very grateful. And they made it so easy for me. I came up, I've never been in a musical before. I'm learning all this new jargon, like put-ins and tracks and all the new words I'm learning. But they couldn't have been kinder and sweeter and helped me. And there I am. And alas, we've only got 4 more weeks.
Anais Mitchell won the Tony for Best Original Score for Hadestown. When asked what she was planning on doing next, of course she has a few irons in the fire.
Oh yes, back to the world of music. I've been working on a new folk band project. It's a band called Bonnie Light Horseman, Bonnie B-O-N-N-Y. And it's myself and the frontman from a band called Fruit Bats and a guy named Josh Kaufman, who's a guitarist, and we're gonna do Newport Folk Festival and Pickathon and some stuff this summer.
Andre DeShields, with a career spanning half a century, is probably one of the most composed of the evening, even though this is his first Tony win of his lifetime. He took home the award for Best Featured Actor in a Musical for Hadestown. Simply asked how he felt, he had the following to say.
I felt successful. I felt a kind of completion, because I wasn't going to leave Broadway until they gave me what I thought I deserved. But there's so many other adventures that I want to have. There's so many other mountains that I want to climb. Because at the end of that statement, you'll recall, I said, the top of one mountain is the bottom of the next. Keep climbing. I gaze at the stars because the stars gaze at me. So every decision I make has to do with my being a triple Capricorn. And of course, Capricorns are mountain climbers. So I'm looking for my next peak.
Perhaps best known for his work on television as the neurotic father on Malcolm in the Middle or the psychotic meth dealer on Breaking Bad, Bryan Cranston cemented himself as one of the greatest actors of the last few years, winning his second Tony Award for his second role on Broadway for his work in Network. When I asked him about whether he wanted to do more theater, of course he too said yes.
I love it. I do. I love it. It's really the most fun and connective that an actor can have is to be on stage. It drains the hell out of me, though. It really does. Because I seem to be attracted to really damaged characters. So I don't... I keep thinking of like a comedy where I'm sipping tea or something, and I think, well, that'd be nice. Wouldn't that be lovely to just sit around? But unless something really catches me and I sense a journey for someone, even if it's unobtainable, I am attracted to that damaged being. So, 4 years? Like every, I have to go recuperate and then come back.
Also, in what was inevitably some of the best advice given to other actors, he explains why he simply doesn't get on social media. He just tries to focus on the good and the positive.
I don't read anything on social media coming in because I don't need to. I don't mean that in a crass way. I mean that I don't need to be the recipient of a bombardment of negativity and vilification, you know, because I speak out on a lot of things. And it's just, I want to speak my truth. If you don't agree with it, that's okay. But I don't think we want to make enemies of people who have a different opinion.
Winning her first Tony for Best Actress in a Musical after two previous nominations, Stephanie J. Block speaks to us on actually texting Cher.
It's really crazy. Well, she's not Cher in my phone, as you can imagine, because if you lose your phone, that's information that shouldn't get out. But I do, every time my phone kind of goes ding, 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 ding. If you get 7 or 8 dings, I pretty much know it's going to be sweet Cher on the other side. So she was wishing love. She's really proud of the show. She said that it's bringing so much joy in a time where, you know, some of us have some heavy hearts. She was delicious in the sense that she said, good luck tonight. I mean, tomorrow. I mean, tonight. No, I mean, Sunday. Right, Sunday. I love you, doll. Sunday. And then, you know, the kiss emoji. It's all very Cher. I mean, she's so authentically herself, whether it's an email or a text message or in person. So she translates the same, and it's just so beautifully authentic.
In Stephanie's televised acceptance speech, she referenced a journal entry that she wrote to herself when she was a small child. Here is her response when asked what the younger Stephanie would think about present-day Stephanie.
Well, when I go to my therapist, we will talk about that. It's really amazing just because it is something you don't work for the award, but it is always that hope, that wish, that dream, that goal. And I'm serious. I mean, that little journal paper was from 1984. And so to stand up there 30 some years later and to know that that actually happened really brings me to my knees, because there were so many times that I just thought, New York is just too much. It's all too much. I quit this business at least 2-3 times a year, and yet I still stand here because of the people who love me, and I know it all takes endurance and tenacity, and, you know, not to bring it back to Cher, but that was one of the reasons why I said yes to play her. Her tenacity and her resilience and never giving up on whatever life throws at her has brought me here. I'm just so grateful.
As the night wears to a close, Hadestown takes the coveted Tony Award for Best Musical. This brings Anais Mitchell and Rachel Chavkin back to the media room once again, along with several others from the production team. Again, we hear from Anais.
It's pretty surreal. The whole night is pretty surreal. And I'm so grateful that this show has found a home here on Broadway, having come from this really wild and unconventional place. And and really, everyone who's touched the show, artists and producers alike, has put the art first. And so the fact that art and commerce go together sometimes is a beautiful thing.
Credited as being the primary driving force behind bringing Hadestown to the Broadway stage, producer Dale Franzen gives her thoughts.
I would just say, as a woman, I think tonight was a really incredible night for women. I just want to say that, and I hope that what Rachel said in her speech becomes the norm and that we don't have to say that anymore. That women need to be producing, they need to be directing, they need to be given the opportunity. So for me, it's been, I'm a Californian, this has been an eye-opener, what it's like on Broadway. It's an amazing place, but we do need to do some work here. And we're really proud, Mara and I especially, that we are like the fairy godmothers of these two incredible women who are the future. Right?
Yeah, I was just going to throw out there that also that multiple times working on this with Rachel and with our creative and design teams, we've felt like we were chipping away at a sculpture that was already in the stone, and that is the feeling of working on these really old myths and stories that, you know, we were chipping away, and sometimes you'll see like the left ear of the thing suddenly comes into focus, and it came through a choreography move or a costume piece or a sudden staging idea or a new rhyme in the lyrics. Or a violin part, and to have so many artists coming together to be trying to divine what this thing already is and wants to be chipped out of the stone to become more clear. That has been what it's felt like to me.
That's great, everyone. Take five. Take five.
I'm tired.
It's 11:37 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That joke is done.
It's a sad song.
It's a sad song.
Guys, this is the best night ever. We're both exhausted, but it's amazing.
Hadestown creative team just left.
Coming into the press room in a different order than how the awards were actually given out, the final two to speak to the press room are Jez Butterworth and Laura Donnelly from The Ferryman, which won Best Play. Jess gives us a little insider information before speaking to the content of the play itself, which was based off of the real-life murder of Laura's uncle by the IRA.
The first thing I felt when we won was, how am I going to get past... I'd been instructed to get up there as quickly as I possibly could, and as you could probably tell, I'm not a speed-based animal. Like I move quite slowly. So I had to get past Laura's dress to get on the stage to say anything of any import, and by the time I got up there, it already said, "Can you wrap this up?" on the teleprompter. So I thought I'd blown it by that point. I thought I'd let you down. I've never written a play before that is based on somebody else's life story who I'm that close to so consciously, and it has felt from the beginning as if I was borrowing from her family's loss and her family's grief. In a way that I'm not sure I've ever been entirely comfortable with. But I also feel, I've written seven plays and twice I've felt as inspired by an actor to write it. And one was Jerusalem with Mark Rylance and the other one was this one with Laura.
We made it to the end. Thanks for listening to episode 5 of Serial, part of the Broadway Lovers Complete Breakfast. Visit us online via theater_podcast on Instagram and Twitter, via thetheaterpodcast.com, or send us an email via feedback@thetheaterpodcast.com. And make sure to follow Parody Bill on Instagram for more amazing Playbill mashups.
You think being Tony's host would feel like sitting on a Broadway throne? Now I'm against the wall in this toilet stall as I scroll through Twitter on my phone. Reading people say Corden's a talentless hack, and why CBS can't get Neil Patrick Harris back. Now I'm just James in the bathroom. James in the bathroom at the Tonys. Broadway's biggest fraud. I'm paranoid I'll fall or trip or rip my tux. Afraid that Anna Wintour thinks this outfit sucks. I'm just James who you don't know. James from the Late Late Show. James in the bathroom by himself.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical, Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suffs has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard. So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah,
not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.